Did you miss us? Yes, we've gone a couple weeks without a new podcast due to travel, so I'm recording this one live from the Sundance Film Festival. Well, the festival wraps up today, but I'm heading out of town on my way back to New York City. We have a special guest today, Guy Lodge from In Contention, who is live from Chicago, with Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks and Katie Rich from New York. So we're all over the place today. This podcast is not edited. It's the full unedited version because I'm on the go. So please forgive the slow ramp up. Here we go. Enjoy. Leave us comments.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
How's mom?
Good. She seems good. She's sound asleep now. She stays up so late.
Do you think she's dreaming about Frozen?
It turned out she'd already seen it, even though she kept insisting that she hadn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you think she was genuinely confused about whether she'd seen it?
Yes.
Oh, is that alarming?
No.
Okay.
She's very forgetful.
Okay.
So, I don't know if anybody else is showing up.
Well, it sounded like Katie was supposed to. She had asked for Sunday.
Oh, here she said. I just got a text from her.
She heard you.
Computer drama. Coming ASAP.
Okay, well, that's promising. Is that a preview for a movie called Computer Drama?
So wait, how am I hearing Guy without calling him yet? Do you have two headphones on your machine?
We have no headphones.
Oh, you're just talking to the computer.
You just have this super strength mic, obviously.
Wow.
This is a very... It's the way of the PC.
Well, how do I sound this time? Because I have a different setup than usual.
You sound really good.
Yeah. Katie Rich is online, so that's a good start.
Okay.
No more drama, as Mary J. Blige would say.
I bought... Because I forgot my headphones, so I bought, like, this thing out of one of those vending machines in the airport.
Uh-huh.
And so I had no idea if I was wasting money or not.
It's like you're in the room with us.
Cool.
Hello.
It's also, why aren't you? Hey, Katie.
Hi. Sorry I'm late.
God, Katie. You're ruining my life.
You guys are such natural early risers, and I find
this such a
challenge to get up in time.
I'm in Utah, so...
Oh, my God.
I'm getting up at 7. I got up at 6:30.
You've been on film festival time. That, like, makes you a weird sleeper in general.
Or a non-sleeper, as the case may be, in film festival time.
We can just pretend we're all getting up for the Oscar nominations again. To recapture that excitement.
Guy, were you at Sundance for Oscar nominations at some point?
I was. It was hard.
It's the worst. It's so terrible.
Yeah.
It's like, by the time I'd finished writing up all the sort of stuff I had to write, and I was like, oh, good, I can go to bed. And then I was like, oh, wow, it's the first day of Sundance, now I have to see 3 movies.
That's what I want to do. And by the end of the day, you've, like, forgotten any of who's nominated for the Oscars. It's, like, so exactly. Out of your brain.
Well, the way I did...
Because of that, I still quite haven't got... Usually I would have them memorized by now, and I think because of Sundance, I just do not.
We'll help you.
Yeah.
It's Claire Danes Temple Grandin.
I like saving Mr. Banks, like, led the nominations. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
Right into the ground.
Well, this is why I came to Sundance 2 days late this year, but I don't recommend that either because I missed Whiplash, which went on to win.
Well, I was there and I still missed Whiplash, so... Yeah.
Did it not screen again? Is it just the one time?
I just couldn't. It either I couldn't fit into my schedule or the P&I screenings were over and it was sold out, the other shows.
Yeah. So.
Well, anyway, in case you haven't noticed, we're back, the podcast.
You've been listening to a podcast.
And we have a special guest here, Guy Lodge.
Hello.
Who is visiting Nick.
Who is apparently no longer special, just old hat.
Just a regular old hat.
Yeah. You weren't even at Sundance, Nick.
I should account for myself.
I also wasn't there, so I'm transplanting my lack of self-esteem about Sundance onto you, so.
Well, Katie, you've had many years of Sundance. You're like a superstar of Sundance.
Yeah, I am ridiculously spoiled. I can't really complain. I've had wonderful Sundances, and it was very fun watching it from a distance this year.
Well, so
yeah, we all missed each other. It's nice to be talking to you guys again.
Yes. Yeah, it's been a while. So, do non-Sundance, do shameful Sundance-free people have any questions for Guy and I?
I just want to know your feelings and thoughts.
All the feelings and thoughts.
How cold are you? How much time
do you have?
Yeah. Do you like the buses? Do you feel like the routes make sense?
I mean, these are very leading questions.
I feel like I was seeing people saying over and over again that there were so many good movies they couldn't choose. And then in the last couple of days, I felt like I started seeing this drumbeat of like, oh, it was disappointing. There was nothing really that wonderful. And I'm very confused. And maybe this happens every year and I just don't notice it. But is there a consensus about if it's a good or a bad year?
I mean, I think it's the case that, I mean, I think it was a good year. I think there were fewer sort of breakout word of mouth sort of buzz hits than usual, which is why maybe for those first few days people weren't that clued in as to what they needed to be chasing. So it seemed like there was a lot, and then at the end, maybe especially when the awards were announced and people realized they hadn't seen any of them, they were like, oh yeah, I think it was a bit sort of subpar. I mean, I saw so much great stuff. I mean, I saw like I think almost 30 movies, and maybe three of them I would say I thought were bad. So that's a really good strike rate. Mm-hmm. And yet I look down the list of award winners and I'm like, I was there. I saw movies. Yeah. I just did not see these movies.
Yeah, I was shocked last night looking through the list. I think I had seen two of the many, many winners. And I saw, I didn't go without the buzz titles. Like Love is Strange was a big hit, but won nothing. Richard Linklater's Boyhood.
Was that eligible for awards, though? Wasn't that just screening?
Oh, it might not have been.
It was a premiere, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really as clear on Sundance as to what's eligible and what's not.
It's not easy to keep track of.
Yeah, it's confusing to follow, even from the outside.
Yeah. So, Guy, what were your three favorites, let's say?
Well, like everyone else, and it was really boring, because at Sundance you keep asking that question to people and get the same answer, but Boyhood was, I think, in another league to any other sort of Sundance title I saw there, because it's just, I'm not sure if people are familiar what it is. It's like Richard Linklater's latest time-lapse sort of experiment, shot over 12 years with the same four actors, about this Texan family watching this sort of boy literally come of age before our eyes, because it, you know, follows him from age 6 to 18. So it's both a really kind of interesting gimmick, but also really kind of fully fleshed and moving family drama. And I thought nothing else at Sundance was on that sort of scale of ambition and then realized so completely. Mm-hmm. Apart from Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac, which was like the surprise film and also blew me away. So I would keep saying to people, oh yeah, well, my two favorites at this amazing festival of discovery are the Linklater and the Lars von Trier, which felt kind of, you know, off message. But, and then if I had to go for number three, I would say Jim Mickle's Cold in July, which was in competition, I think, and won nothing. Really sort of twisty 80s retro thriller with Michael C. Hall. Mm-hmm. That kind of plays like a history of violence, like beaten to a very, very, very pulpy pulp. I liked that a lot.
I want to hear Nathaniel's favorites, but Guy, you saw Whiplash and Nathaniel didn't, so...
I did not see Whiplash.
Oh, you didn't? Oh.
Well, I drew the short straw on the opening night because we all had to review all the different opening night movies, and someone else got Whiplash and I got The Green Prince, which I see did win something. So, you know, at least I saw an award winner.
And you liked it, right?
Which I liked.
Yeah.
And then I heard people talking about Whiplash, and as the days sort of went by, I got the idea that this was one of the movies that people really liked and I should probably catch up with it. But it just never found its way into my schedule, and I'm sorry about that, but I'm sure I'll see it.
Well, sounds like it's going to find its way to all of our schedules now.
Yeah.
A movie about competitive jazz drumming starring Miles Teller, whom I do like, and J.K. Simmons just didn't sound that compelling.
Well, yeah, but it did win the two big prizes, both of them, which, if any of you recall, Fruitvale won the same two prizes last year.
As did Precious a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It's been happening more and more.
I did not see Fruitvale at Sundance last year, so, you know, at least I'm keeping up a good tradition.
Do you think when they made Whiplash, they were like, this is probably the next Precious or Fruitvale?
I mean, you look at Miles Teller and you totally think that.
You do. Like, yeah. Just the box set just looms before your eye.
Like, is J.K. Simmons this year's Monique?
I assume. Yes.
I sincerely hope so.
Let's hope it can be about the performance and not the politics.
J.K. Simmons is so politically divisive.
That's right.
So, Nathaniel, sorry for...
I share Boyhood as a favorite, which Guy already beautifully explained why it's as worthy as it is. And the other ones, I loved Ira Sachs's Love is Strange, which for me was a pleasant surprise because I was not at all a fan of his other critical hit.
Keep the Lights On?
Yeah. Which I just thought was, you know, shapeless and monotonous, and but this one was just so full, and it had such a, you know, great range of tempers and moods, and yet it all was coalesced very beautifully.
Had you seen earlier movies of his before Keep the Lights On?
I had not, no. So it's possible that was just an off one for me.
You didn't see Married Life? I thought you did.
Oh, I did, and I did not like that one either. So, okay. Yeah, so I wasn't previously of the same opinion as many critics about him. But I thought this was a pretty great movie. And my third...
I loved reading interviews with Alfred Molina and John Lithgow for this movie because they just seemed so psyched about it. Like, more so... I mean, all Sundance actors are, like, so psyched about their projects. But mm-hmm. I don't know. It made me want to see the two of them as a couple by reading the interviews because they seemed to like each other so much. It was very endearing.
Yeah. And then the third one, I go back and forth, you know, because there's a bunch of movies I really liked. You know how movies come in tiers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this one is the best, and then there's all of these competing for second best. But I would probably go with the Norwegian film Blind, which won the screenwriting, World Cinema screenwriting.
Yeah.
Actresses.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people. That one was, I think, of all the world cinema titles, that was the one I heard people talking about the most. And I kind of noticed it down. But then I saw it was going to be in Berlin. So I was like, yes, I'll catch you there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that one I've already reviewed. But it hasn't. The review hasn't gone up yet. But it will by the time you have heard this podcast. So, yeah, that one was really good, and it was by the same guy who wrote, co-wrote the Joachim Trier movies that are, like so much from Norway.
But and the cinematography of Dogtooth, which should go on any movie poster.
Yes. Yeah, the cinematography is beautiful. And I also saw the cinematography winner, Lilting, and the images are beautiful, but I was... surprised. It's a very low-key movie, so I was surprised it took home a cinematography prize.
Where is it from?
That one is from England.
Yeah.
But it's about Cambodian immigrants.
Oh.
Sounds grim.
So, John Lithgow and Alfred Molina don't just ratchet each other up into some, like, sandstorm of overacting? Because this was my fear.
They do not, which is kind of shocking, considering the two of them.
Yeah.
But I'm already like
sandstorm of overacting.
I'm already predicting who will become supporting in this movie about two men.
And how are you making that determination? I wonder.
Mm-hmm. The same way I always make it.
Who's more famous?
Who's on top and who's on bottom now?
Was it Joe who refers to that as who's going to get the Jack twist? I think it's Joe.
And is it Alfred Molina? Because he just supports us all, really.
Yeah, no, but it's funny that you'd ask that about the overacting, because I thought, with those two in it, you know, this won't be subtle, but it really was.
Wow, well, that's great.
Yeah.
And who else is in it?
Marissa Tomei.
Yay. Oh, I didn't even realize that.
She plays the niece of John Lithgow. Or the niece-in-law, whatever you call that.
If I had known that, I might have hurried to Love is Strange more. Because you know, I also had some reservations about Keep the Lights On, so I was like, yeah, I'll get to it.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marissa would have...
And Cheyenne Jackson, too, right?
Oh, yeah, Cheyenne Jackson is in it as well. His part is much smaller.
Oh, okay.
And then there's Harriet Harris. Do you guys know her?
Oh, from Thoroughly Modern Millie years ago?
Yes.
Nice.
So she's in it, but she's in it very briefly. But
is she funny? Is she there to be funny?
It's not a laugh riot movie.
Uh-huh.
I guess she probably gets one laugh.
Is anyone else from Thoroughly Modern Millie in it?
Is there a tap routine?
There is not, alas. But anyway, yeah, it's very good.
So did Love is Strange get picked up?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if, like, I assume none of these actually have release dates. Although I thought Boyhood was coming, like, really soon.
I think May. I think they're talking about May.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, because Linklater usually does summer releases, so that's something to look forward to for everybody.
So that, like, film critics then can then complain 6 months later that everyone's forgotten about it for the Oscars.
Yep.
When they also don't give it awards in there.
Right. So is he planning to continue to make more... like, sustain the storyline with these actors he's already been filming with for 12 years, or is this done, or did anybody ask that? I bet somebody asked that.
Didn't really answer that question, I don't think, but I just so see that happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would suspect that was a possibility, but he didn't. Yeah, he didn't.
Assuming the actors are all willing, and, you know, Patricia Arquette doesn't have much else going on.
So how dare you?
Although she's really good in it.
She's fantastic. I think I could see her being... you know, getting some supporting actress attention. So.
Yeah.
Even though she's really a lead. But, you know, that's starting up already. It's
God. She and Ethan Hawke playing the characters they played in Fast Food Nation, because they were related in that, right? No, for real. That was Richard Linklater. I'm not crazy.
They are a divorced couple in Boyhood.
Oh, okay.
So they are the parents of the boy.
Mm.
But, yeah, she gets a lot more screen time than Ethan Hawke does, since she raises the boy.
I'm so excited about Linklater being on this roll lately. Like, that's three really great movies in a row. It's really exciting. Oh, I loved Bernie.
I'll just...
But two
out of three ain't bad.
my favorite moment from the Q&A for Boyhood, though, was people asking about how did the actors feel that they had to keep doing this for 12 years, you know. And the daughter in the film, because it really, in some ways, is childhood rather than boyhood, because there's a boy and a girl.
Yeah, it's the title's a misnomer.
And the girl is actually Richard Linklater's daughter. So,
and she's how old now?
And she is, like, 20, I think, now?
Yeah.
Something like that. But they asked her, how did you feel about, you know, having... you know, to do this, and she said about 3 or 4 years in, she asked her dad, can my character die? and he said, no, that would be too dramatic. So she's in the whole thing, but she's pretty fun in it, too.
She's great. She does a great Oops, I Did It Again.
Yes, she does. You
know, oh, wow.
The actress's skill set. So yeah. She nails that early on.
I've heard that about June Squibb as well.
It's on the blooper reel for Nebraska. Like in that initial scene, she stands by that gravestone and kind of does the dance.
I think Nebraska should have been called Oops, I Did It Again.
Nick, this was your chance not to have to talk about Alexander Payne for an entire podcast.
That's right.
I'll look at you.
Look at me. Look at me indeed.
You brought it back to Alexander Payne.
I can't help but think about June Squibb. I mean, I wasn't thinking so. I was thinking about the rest of her body of work.
The Britney Spears-related body of work.
That's right.
That moment in About Schmidt, where she died.
When she's vacuuming. Yeah. Death by vacuuming is brutal. People don't realize it's happening, but you need to be aware.
My mom, it's a famous story among my friends in high school, my mom fell asleep vacuuming.
Wow.
And we walked
like,
in.
Well,
what?
Well, was she standing up while she was doing it, or was she kind of remote then?
She was standing up while she was doing it.
Was she okay?
She was.
I mean, that could go very wrong.
Huh?
You have us very concerned about your mom now.
Well, this was many, many years ago, and she's still with us. And I believe that this is probably the first internationally renowned and beloved podcast, plug, plug, that is recording live from Oak City, Utah.
Hello, Oak City, Utah. It's going to be the new Sundance
in no time. Park City, Oak City, you know, whatever.
It is a town with about 7 or 8 blocks that takes about, you know, an hour drive off a major freeway to get to. So it
sounds like they should have Sundance there. It would be much easier to get around.
It's true. Kellen Lutz wouldn't bother to show up. Great.
We could just have like screenings in your mom's living room, which wouldn't be significantly worse, I'm guessing, than the library. So, you know,
the Yarrow. For
it. Or the Mark, where the screen only covers like a third of the room.
Well, my mom lives in the heart of a major metropolitan area, and there's no internet in her house, so I'm totally feeling Oak City right now. This seems great.
Well, yeah, there's no Wi-Fi in this, so I actually have to be plugged in, which is disturbing.
How can you live like that?
Yes. So I can't, this is a podcast that's recorded from a tiny little desk when I would much rather be doing it from bed.
Jeez, you have to churn your own butter there? Is it like Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene? We won't ask about Oak City.
No, let's not go to religious cults while we're in Utah. Especially in a town where everyone belongs to the same religion.
You refer to Islam.
Moving on. Okay, so let's talk about the DGA Awards. Because everything happens at once. So we were complaining about Oscar nominations being during Sundance, and now the DGA Awards are during the end of Sundance.
And, like, who saw that write-in win for Lee Daniels coming?
I know. It's the all-Oprah voting block in the DGA that really does it.
And I know that Guy and... I can't remember, Katie, offhand, if you were with Guy and Nick in loving Gravity.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Gravity.
Yeah, I'm... I'm thrilled with that. I mean, it's looking like, for the first time in my life, my actual favorite film of the year might actually win the Oscar. So I am happy as a clam right now.
Has that never happened in your life?
I think it might have been The Hurt Locker if I was talking like U.S. releases.
But, okay.
You know, then my life gets really complicated with you know, release schedules, and I try to not think about it too hard.
Mm-hmm. He's also only 6 years old, which people don't realize.
It's true. I mean, I only date back to, like, what?
No Country for Old Men.
I think Crash was my first Best Picture winner. You know, obviously, tragic. I'm very sentimental.
It's gone uphill since then. For that reason.
That's true. If that was your first Oscar win, and then you really had so much to look forward to.
Well, then I am the lone person pulling for 12 Years a Slave to still pull it off.
You can say you're the only person who's defying gravity. We said that. How about that?
I am very much pulling for 12 Years a Slave to actually win Best Picture, and I still think it will, actually. But I think Alfonso Cuarón deserves that DGA and the Best Director statue a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
I like everything. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like Katie. I'm in an unusual position in that I like 12 Years a Slave, Gravity, and American Hustle, and would actually be totally happy for any of those three guys winning an Oscar. So I know in the world of like Oscar and Twitter sort of argument, that is like heresy, but
yeah.
I'm totally down with it. I think we have three really good and completely different movies like scrabbling for the top position, which is both interesting and kind of rewarding, because I think it shows a lot about where the Academy is at right now. Mm-hmm. Or where even the DGA is right now, which did we ever know that before?
Do we all think he's going to win the Oscar? I assume he's going to win.
Oh, Cuarón, yes. I've been assuming that even when I thought 12 Years was shoe-in for Best Picture.
That for a while.
Yeah.
And because who can begrudge Cuarón an Oscar by this point in his career? I think he has way earned one, whether you like Gravity or not. I mean, you can just imagine that he's like winning it for Isu Mama Tambien instead.
Yeah. I don't know.
What I plan to do.
I don't think anyone in the Academy is thinking about it this way, but I think of it as a retribution for Children of Men and how terribly that movie got treated. I like to think they all came to their senses and recognized how great it is.
Yeah. And I'm not really imagining that they're doing this for Great Expectations, but I'm doing it myself because I love that movie.
I think you are allowed to.
And when Emmanuel Lubezki wins the Cinematography Oscar, I'll also pretend it's from another Alfonso Cuarón movie.
You're so going to be wise to yourself the whole ceremony.
That's right.
That's how you survive the Oscars.
Yeah.
So do you now think that Gravity will win Best Picture, or is this just your fear?
I'm leaning that way, mostly for pessimistic reasons, because I'm not a fan of Gravity. But also I think this is going to sound so petty, and I don't mean it to sound that way, but I also think kind of it's really – it almost never – plays the way that sort of minority groups can have a win. So, you know, like Brokeback losing when all the signs pointed to it winning. And, you know, I think the same thing could easily happen to 12 Years a Slave. And it just seems like it's going to be a while still until we're more diverse in terms of what the public of the Academy, so to speak, which is, you know,
dumb. Well, Sandra Bullock is kind of a minority group in Gravity. And Alfonso Cuarón is, you know, he would be the first, like, Mexican or Latin.
Yeah, he'd be the first
winner, which is, you know, not insignificant.
No, it's not. I'm just saying in general, like, this is a truism about Oscar that it ends up falling to the sort of the most normative, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
And even though Gravity would be a first in a lot of ways, it would be the first sci-fi film, it would be the first Latin director, it's still, you know, I just don't think there would even be a contest if 12 Years a Slave was not 12 Years a Slave, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't the Crash logic also point to 12 Years a Slave winning because of the white guilt factor? Like, the idea that, not even white guilt, but just, like, the Academy wanting to see itself as being, you know, doing something important for history and not wanting to be those people who were too afraid of the slavery movie.
Except for the Crash was if you wanted to make a statement, Crash was a much more cowardly statement than Brokeback.
It wasn't the idea that, like, it, you know, complimented people in overcoming their racism. And I mean, it's definitely a cowardly statement, but, like, because it, you know, it's like, oh, we're taking on, we are embracing the movie that addresses racism and aren't we heroes for it?
Well, I like Crash, I think, maybe more than the average bear, but I think whether or not you like that movie, the way that movie works is to kind of have characters talk in ways that people don't talk, and to kind of jerry-rig situations in a way that doesn't actually happen. And so even if you're into it, I wonder if it just presses a different button than facing a movie that is so, like, saturated with forcing you to face something and not sort of notional white guilt in a movie that doesn't make you feel that guilty insofar as it's hard to see yourself in Crash. Yeah. But
it's quite an abrasive film, which is why I was always surprised that it sort of became like the easy alternative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think they make one of these every year.
And I think the Oscars kind of force those narratives or force those roles, because what I'm feeling, especially with this year, with Gravity, American Hustle, and 12 Years a Slave, which I'm assuming are still, like, the three front runners, is that Philomena. Well, let's remove Philomena for now, because that's going to completely ruin my point otherwise.
You're fucking up your predictions.
But none of those three are really typical Best Picture winners.
That's true.
In the kind of traditional sense. And because of this, we're forcing, like, you know, American Hustle is like the middle brow, you know, Academy bait that actors love, which doesn't really quite feel true. And Gravity is the Hollywood blockbuster that the steak eaters will vote for, which isn't really true either, because it's such a sort of stark and minimal and
spiritual. Right, yeah, and 12 Years a Slave is the white liberal guilt movie, only it's really not, because it's not pandering at all.
And all three movies are, I think, about the most interesting versions of what they could be.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, we all win.
We all win. Except for Philomena.
Hey, Harvey Weinstein is trying to start whispering around about how he's going to win Best Picture with Philomena. And God, you know what? I wouldn't even be surprised. If that happened, mark my words. I saw it coming.
You know, that's...
Well, maybe there'll be a tie among various of these movies, which is one way to get to the PGA, which I think we haven't talked about either. But can I ask quickly about the DGA? Did you guys see The Square, which won the documentary award?
Yeah.
I have not seen that.
I planned to before the Oscars, but...
Were you super into it?
I wasn't super into it, but I respect it.
Me too.
And I'm increasingly feeling that it's the one that's going to win.
The Square?
Yeah. I feel it has that...
Without Blackfish in the race.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
Sorry.
As much as
we Sorry, love Blackfish.
Lisa Fisher is totally gravitas personified, but I feel they're going to feel The Square is more gravitas personified. Than...
You don't think that The Act of Killing has the gravitas edge?
I just think The Act of Killing is so formally kind of unusual and in some cases quite sort of aggravating. Yeah, and I know a lot of abrasive. People who really don't respond to that movie and are left quite sort of shocked and cold by it. And I imagine a lot of voters... I'm not, you know, doing assumptions about middlebrow Academy voters, but I even know, you know, really, really smart kind of film centric people who did not respond to that film. And
I'm still avoiding it because I just think I'm going to be repulsed by it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't really like. I mean, I think when I hear about it, I think formally it sounds interesting, but I just don't want to subject myself to it.
And if you're still avoiding it, I think that means a lot of Academy members will be as well. But I'm willing to be surprised.
Is The Square worthy? Like, is it going to be an outrage if it?
No, I liked it. I didn't. I think similarly to what we were saying about some other possible winners. Like, I'll be even happier as just a body of work. Like, I think Shahani Nujaim has made a lot of really good documentaries. I wouldn't say this is my favorite of them, but it was. Like, I still think I like Control Room even more than this. And I thought Startup.com, which if you are really into the Wolf of Wall Street story, you should go back and rent. They're not exactly the same, but there are parallels. But this one was certainly super risky. And I think the movie has a little trouble kind of getting you past your first or second impressions of the people it's quote-unquote following. Like, there's not a ton of... kind of narrative line, even though you get the sense it's really trying to impose some, but it's very moving and sort of staggering to see that Tahrir Square footage and to, you know, not surprisingly, I think the US media kind of turned all the different moments in the square into like one thing that was happening, and now we talk about the Arab Spring and recapturing the real ups and downs of what was going on is really valuable.
All that, and I think an Oscar for Netflix is going to become a really sort of heartfelt cause célèbre in the industry.
I'm sure they'll be delighted. Yeah. Can we?
That's really what matters most is the Oscar for Netflix.
Yeah. And just if we can stay on DJ for one more second, I'm never going to understand how Behind a Candelabra was interesting, much less how it was interestingly directed. Can somebody help me?
I am, and this is... You are speaking as someone who hasn't even seen Top of the Lake, so...
It's true.
You know, you are just... You're not even on anyone's side there. Well,
that's because I hate Jane Campion.
That bitch. What's she even...
I can't believe you're making me go back and face my disappointment with Behind the Candelabra, because I was so excited about it, and I didn't see it for, like, a couple weeks after it came out, and I didn't really want to acknowledge that I might not be as over the moon about it, and... Yeah, that movie could have been a lot better. I
liked it, but it felt very tossed off to me, which is a problem I have a lot with Soderbergh.
Mm.
And actually with a lot of filmmakers who are that.
But we have like the full spectrum of reactions here, because I love Behind the Candelabra, and I think it's one of his best films. And actually I thought it felt really carefully crafted, and I think one of his most sort of detailed and substantial films in a really long time.
I think the one of the reasons it didn't totally hit with me, even though I liked it, was I kind of feel like it needed, since the topic was Liberace, that it kind of needed somebody like Baz Luhrmann to really go with the visual extravagance, because I just think it was a little lacking in that department, and that was the one department that it maybe should have been really over the top in. And Soderbergh is kind of sedate in that way, even though his movies can be visually interesting, they're not visually grand. You know?
Yeah.
I'm a Baz Luhrmann defender, and my eyes are kind of crossing over just imagining that idea.
It would probably be too exhausting to watch the Baz Luhrmann Liberace movie.
I don't know. I just, I love the idea of, like, going with having the film, you know, subsume the identity of the character, you know?
Like it does in the very end of the movie.
Right.
But I love the design elements of that film, actually. And I'm a member of the London Film Critics Circle, where we nominated it for Best Production Design. So maybe I'm just defending my group's thought process.
That damn group think.
I just love how sort of shimmery and mirrory that whole film is.
You were the lucky jerks who got to treat it as a theatrical film while we all had it relegated to television, so...
Along with BAFTA, where Michael Douglas still got snubbed for Bruce Dern. You know. But at least Matt Damon was nominated for his great supporting performance. Whereas June Squibb was not. I don't know. Did anybody forget?
You apparently haven't.
Bringing it back to June Squibb at all times.
Nick's building a shrine to her.
He gave me Bruce Dern and nominated supporting performances and snubs. I mean, what else were we going to do?
And your brain just went there.
Working through something.
I don't think anybody has said the word snub. Except for you, Nick.
Now here it is.
Guy just said it. Oh. I was here.
So
it's a syllable shorter than omission. Time's at a premium.
Do-do-do.
Wait, where are you taking us next, Nathaniel?
I'm sorry. I do have somewhere I wanted to take us. So we briefly mentioned the PGA tie, and of course that's old news now, but I am wondering if you could have a tie in any category on Oscar night, what would it be and why?
Ooh.
Like among who's actually nominated?
Among who's actually nominated. Who's going to be the brave soul that goes first?
Do you have an answer already because you thought of the question?
Well, I have one answer that might seem kind of cynical, but I do have an answer.
Okay.
And my cynical one, it's not my actual choice, is supporting actress tie for Jennifer Lawrence and Lupita Nyong'o.
Uh-huh.
Because I still fear Jennifer Lawrence winning.
Yeah.
But I would also like, since I understand that the world is absolutely besotted with her, and I sometimes feel that way myself, I would kind of like to get it the second win out of the way since it's coming, but I don't want it to be at the expense of Lupita.
Yeah.
It's an interesting,
like it's coming in 2 years time. I think we're just in a very Jennifer Lawrence place right now.
We are.
Yeah. Like I thought Emma Stone was going to get nominated to the Supreme Court a couple years ago and you know, I almost forget that she's famous.
Much less a judge.
Much less a judge. She's just judging in you know, humility and privacy now.
Yeah, and then my happier one is costume design. I would really like to see a tie between 12 Years a Slave and American Hustle. 12 Years a Slave to honor Patricia Norris, who's never been honored and who's great. And American Hustle...
And it's 82, right?
Yeah, and American Hustle just because I love the costumes.
I think I'm going to go in the music, the song category, which not a category I care that much about, but I think that Pharrell's Happy is such a great song. I listen to it all the time, and I recognize that Frozen is going to win this thing and nothing can stop it, but I would like to see Happy get rewarded because it is delightful, and I don't think anybody is thinking about it, so this is not going to happen.
I'm either... hoping that Frozen and The Wind Rises can both win animation, but I haven't seen Ernest and Celestine, so which I gather is fantastic, so I guess I can't judge that yet. So I'm going to go with the category I'm having the hardest time figuring out who I would vote for, because I'm kind of equally behind Barkhad Abdi and Bradley Cooper. And neither of them will win, but I liked Jared Leto's performance fine. I think he's good in Dallas Buyers Club. I don't think more than that.
And he should be this runaway train.
Yeah. And, like, I still want to see that movie again because I really liked it a lot. But it's certainly the movie where the sort of skeptical takes and sort of political critiques that I've been reading, where sometimes that just feels like kind of standard award season kind of hatchery of mm-hmm. taking down the movies that you don't like. Like, it is really making me rethink what my response was about. And some of that sort of attaches to the treatment of that character, I guess. But even aside from all that, I just thought Barkhad Abdi and Bradley Cooper were both fantastic in their movies. And even though neither of them should arguably be in the supporting actor race, I thought they were great and really hard to compare.
Mm-hmm. I would probably go... I mean, one of the categories I want to go back to is supporting actress, which Nathaniel mentioned earlier, because, and not for cynical reasons, because I actually love both Jennifer Lawrence and Lupita Nyong'o's performances, and they are both working in such completely different registers that I don't really know how you would rationalize voting for one over the other. But then I might even like Julia Roberts in August Osage County more, but I think she's in totally the wrong category, so that kind of messes with my logic. And Sally Hawkins, because I don't think it's the best performance in the category, but I'm just so happy that she is an Oscar nominee. So
yeah.
There's a lot of happiness for me in that category, and I'm snubbing June Squibb.
so, how dare you?
But so because that's just too confusing, that whole thing, I might actually end up saying production design, because I love what's going on in her so much, and it's such an unlikely kind of, it's so the nominee that critics kept singling out, and I was thinking the production designers branch is just going to pretend that does not exist.
I thought the same thing. I was so pleased.
But then I also really love the work in American Hustle, which is, you know, generally the Academy doesn't go for 1970s work in a whole lot in that way, because they tend to think, oh, that's just contemporary. And I think there's so much kind of wit and detail in those sets, and I love the kind of sort of ochre-y, muddy, slimy textures and colors of the whole thing. And it's so what people, most people would just say, oh, that's ugly. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, it's a category where they could have nominated like Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, I'm still stuck 10 years ago, mm-hmm. The Hobbit There Again, or The Invisible Woman, which would have been a more typical and quite worthy nominee. But I think it's a really strong category, actually. And, you know, Gravity, which I really love, even though a lot of people say, oh, that's not production design. But, yeah, I would like to see a tie between American Hustle and her.
Mm-hmm. Do the posters in the UK for American Hustle say muddy, slimy, ochre-y textures?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Very astute of them.
And that's just about Jennifer Lawrence's performance.
Maybe we've just gotten far enough away from the 70s that it's finally period. We've all aged away from it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel similarly to Nathaniel about the costume design category as well, except I really love The Invisible Woman. So I think they've done well in the craft categories overall, except for June Squibb for Best Cinematography, which I
don't know. Do I need to see The Invisible Woman?
I hear it's really good.
I think you do. I really like that movie. I know a lot of people think it's just kind of masterpiece theater, but I think it's much more visually and narratively sort of unusual than that, and quite contemporary in some way.
I thought I'm very mixed on it. I think the masterpiece theater is a very lazy critique that too many people give to period dramas.
Yeah. Well, it's the same way Merchant Ivory just became standard diss, like, years ago,
even though they made great films, so it was very frustrating. But I my problem with Invisible Woman was actually Felicity Jones, who is often my problem.
No,
she's been a problem area for me in general, but I really liked her in this.
Yeah, I was so much more fascinated with everyone else in the movie, and since she was the lead, that was a little difficult for me.
Joanna Scanlon is amazing in that.
Yeah, she's terrific in it.
In the supporting actress race.
Which is why I was absolutely horrified by the British Independent Film Awards that nominated Kristin Scott Thomas instead of her.
I mean, I know I'm generally a fan of default nominating Kristin Scott Thomas, because I think I would be happy to see her, you know, showing up in any category for Confessions of a Shopaholic. Or, but yeah, that was a bad and really lazy call, and the Bithas should be better than that.
So that's there. We have the ties.
Are there any substantive thoughts about the PGA tie that you got? Like, is there anything I should be learning about anything from that?
What I thought was interesting was a whole lot of people said, oh, well, 12 Years a Slave and Gravity Tide, it means, you know, American Hustle isn't as in it as we thought. And I'm like, how do you know that American Hustle wasn't, like, two votes behind?
Yeah.
To just suggest how close that top three is.
Well, that's, I mean, that's always the problem with the dread topic of snubs is you never know. I mean, it could be movies that get zero nominations could be sixth in every category and doesn't mean they didn't like it, you know.
Like The Butler.
Right.
For which Guy and I watched the gag reel on the Blu-ray the other night. Mm-hmm. There is indeed a gag reel on the Blu-ray. I'm not making a joke right now.
This was probably a mistake if they released that Blu-ray before the Oscar nomination.
Yeah, perhaps. Although, it's whatever. It's pretty uninspiring as a gag reel. I know that's a shock to hear, but they...
Oprah gets self-deprecating laughter.
Yeah.
Wait, John Cusack's Nixon nose doesn't fall off or anything?
He isn't even in it. Isn't that terrible?
Terrible.
That seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, Leo Schreiber kind of hogs the whole thing. And then there's an amazing moment where Adrian Lennox accidentally calls Oprah Georgia instead of Gloria. And boy, do they have a laugh about that.
Oh, the Lord.
Guys, they had so much fun making that movie.
For your consideration.
Absolutely.
And Forrest Whitaker, it just makes you realize how amazing his performance in The Butler is, because when the camera is off, he is just jazz hands
syndrome. I thought it was interesting how a lot of the write-ups about the tie, too, was like, wow, this year is really, really close. And, like, I don't know if either only one or the other had won, if it would not have felt like the year was really close.
Yeah.
But I like that the whole storyline just became how incredibly close this race is. So I feel like people will really be obligated to at least watch all three of those movies, because I sometimes can't figure out whether we can even trust that Oscar voters are watching more than one or two movies that are nominated.
Yeah. I mean, one movie that they're in.
Yeah, and really show up to make a principled choice if they all feel like there are three that have a legitimately good shot.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Like, if Gravity had got one more vote and had won, like, the PGA Award all on its own, and now it had the DGA Award, and obviously it wasn't really a factor for the SAG Award, would people think this was just now a runaway train?
Yeah.
Maybe. I think they would, yeah.
But it also might have helped 12 Years a Slave feel like an underdog, which it has needed to feel like and hasn't for...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think only winning the one Globe kind of helped it, actually.
Yeah, and I do too.
The nomination leader also might have slightly helped.
Yeah, I think it's kind of there as an underdog. Like, I think the idea that critics need to defend it, because I think for a while it became really boring to talk about 12 Years a Slave as a critic because everyone was really rewarding it. But now, I mean, I don't know that critics really have any influence at this point, but I am glad that people feel the need to go back and re-embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I think that Gravity has the edge now, I just wrote about this last night, was 12 Years a Slave has much heavier lifting to do, I think, at this point, because it's got to convince the people who are resisting even watching it to watch it. And Gravity has not been the front runner, basically, ever, I don't think.
Yeah.
So now it can feel like a shiny new toy, even though it's just as old, in quotes, as 12 Years.
Although people say that how many people watch things on screeners, like, way more than are seeing these movies in theaters, and is that going to help Gravity at all?
That is not. I watched, you know, you guys know I'm not a fan of Gravity, but I watched it, I did watch it again on a screener.
Yeah.
And it was so much less impressive.
Yeah.
Because when I watched it on the big screen, even though I didn't really like it that much, I was really blown away by all the technical details.
Yeah.
And, like, the sound is just completely amazing. And so those things just weren't as exciting on a screener.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, there's something interesting about the idea of Gravity winning Best Picture and then being completely inaccessible for anyone in the future trying to, like, watch it and figure out what's going on. Because I do think there are winners like that from the past that were very impressive to the audiences of the time, but you just can't really tap into that excitement. Uh-huh. And I wonder, I don't know if that means it is more
like
or less
if Avatar
worthy.
Had beat The Hurt Locker.
Yeah. Or like, think about, like, I think about all those best pictures from the inside and like, what's that Western that won like really early on? That's completely unwatchable now.
Oh, Cimarron. Cimarron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe that was the gravity of that time.
Yeah. Just because it was technically impressive, like the cattle rustling scene or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that what makes Gravity different from an Avatar, though, is I think a lot of people, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself here and projecting, but find it quite an emotionally compelling film, and Sandra Bullock, especially, is a very kind of relatable human element in it. And I think that will even... I'm trying to imagine if a lot of Academy members are watching it on the screener, or if just, and maybe this is absurdly naive, maybe something that did make was that much of a mainstream hit. Maybe some of them did actually see it in theaters.
Oh, I bet a lot did.
Yeah.
But,
And so I just wonder if that might pull them through anyway, because they'll still think of it as like a Sandra Bullock movie and not just this kind of big screen only technical achievement. And as we know, like Sandra Bullock movies win Best Picture all the time. So.
And then there's Philomena. I mean, I think you can certainly say that movie retains every one of its virtues on DVD, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It kind of shocks me that movie is seen in theaters. Like, it doesn't... People are paying money to see that on a big screen.
I did, actually. I missed the critic screening, so I paid for it at Paris.
Wow.
Oh, I love the Paris.
Yeah.
That is where you should... That or the Lincoln Square...
The Paris
is
the best possible scenario for Philomena.
It's definitely Philomena's natural habitat.
If all Academy members had been flown into the Paris, spend your campaign dollars that way, it would win Best Picture.
Well, it's not impossible, as Katie says.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
I think it should be at the Ziegfeld. Just be like a kick line before it starts.
Speaking of jazz hands.
Yeah.
This does kind of take me back to the Venice Film Festival, where I first saw both Gravity and Philomena, and, you know, both on the big kind of Venice screen. And, like, Philomena, which I was obviously fairly underwhelmed by, I don't know why I say obviously, as if I'd never be down with the Philomena, but in this case, yeah, I sort of had the predictable reaction. But people loved that movie.
Yeah,
even, yes.
Like, even film festival... You know, European film festival audiences where there was all this amazing, not just Gravity, but really kind of complex, sort of visionary, cinematically conceived stuff. And yet, after Philomena premiered, all you would hear around the Lido was these Italian accents going, oh, but Philomena, Maestro Stephen Frears, Philomena. They it's a fact.
I love...
Rector they love becomes preceded with maestro.
Wow.
That's funny. I love listening to people at film festivals. You guys, like, one of the things I heard here at Sundance, and it was not related to Sundance, but I heard people on the bus talking about Dallas Buyers Club, and this one guy was like, Jared Leto was so amazing. I absolutely thought he was a girl at the end of the movie.
But not at the beginning?
I guess. I don't know.
You, like, transform so much over the course of the film.
Have I already told my favorite film festival overheard story about Philomena from Toronto, where I was waiting to see Tracks, that Mia Wasikowska movie, or Wasikowska, as Meryl Streep calls her. And there was a woman saving a spot in line behind me for a friend of hers who showed up a little bit later. And I get the sense that the woman saving the spot in line is not beloved. I think she might like her friend more than her friend likes her. Mm-hmm. So her friend was like, did you see Philomena? Was it good? She's like, well, I can't tell you about it first. I have to tell you about all the other movies that I saw. And I did this thing, and she pulled a list out of her coat where I thought of the one word that sums up every movie I've seen so far. Okay, well, can we start with Philomena? No, because it's the best one. I saw, and then I'm forgetting what the movies were, but she was like, I saw August Osage County, and the word for that is incredible. I saw Gravity, and it is wonderful. And, like, the words were so ridiculous. And then she got to Philomena at the end and said, my word for that is phenomenal. And she had the biggest smile on her face, like she'd really cracked the mold there. And her friend was so exhausted. I'm like, why do I go to movies with you? It was great. But she, you know, represents many
she
of those.
She should sell that to the Weinsteins. They should use that in their ad campaign.
They should.
She's the most philomenomenal movie of the year.
The letters could dance and rearrange themselves from Philomena to phenomenal.
That's going to happen next week. Just wait for it.
Yeah. That reminds me of Andy McDowell's Twitter feed. Who I totally follow Andy McDowell on Twitter.
I do too.
Where, like, a few days ago, she just tweeted with, like, ellipses in between every word. Just saw her. Profound. That was it. And I thought that just said everything.
Andy McDowell does speak for all of us.
So, you know, assuming Andy McDowell is a member of the Academy, we know what she is voting for.
Maybe she was the woman I was in line behind. Could be. They say movie stars look different in real life.
Andy McDowell's been hiding in plain sight all these years.
Sleeper cell.
Oh, goodness. Well, I hate to break us off, but I have to run. Because I have much traveling to do to take myself back to New York. But it was great fun to speak to all of you. And thanks for joining us and listening in. Once again, I thank my guest, Katie Rich from Vanity Fair.
Thank you. This was fun.
Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
Let's do this, Barcod.
And Guy Lodge from In Contention.
Love you, June Squibb.
All right. Fingers are crossed and only I can see them.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, guys.